You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everyone and welcome. This is a real terrible movie. In fact, if I recall correctly, according to Rotten Tomatoes, this might be the worst movie we've ever done. So, do with that what you will. We have an insane William Dafoe character. We have Sandy Bullock, who's killing people while she drives, and she's the hero. We have Keanu Reeves, who looked at the script and said, no. I saw it at a birthday party when I was, I don't know, young. I don't know what year this came out off the top of my head, but young. And across the board, we did the first one earlier this season, and God, it's such a good movie. And then this is just a real shame. So enjoy. Also, starting on February 1st, we will open up the everything, Twitter, email, follow us at Twitter, on Myopia Podcast, of course, and you know, the email and everything is on Facebook, and just connect with us in some way. But we're doing a Public Defender Month again. It's been a while, but we want you guys to tell us what to watch. So stay tuned for that in February, and thanks.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com.
We all smoke down here, Georgie.
Welcome to Myopia Defender Childhood. This week, we do a sequel to a movie we did last season. We continue to be disappointed. Was this your choice, Daniel?
Possibly. I don't know. I know I was pushing for Blues Brothers 2000, but I wasn't here for that one.
Yeah, so I took credit for that one. Yeah. So Daniel punishes us by watching Speed 2, The Respeedening. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood, and award-winning comedian on Cineprov. And on panel, we have
Matthew W. Quinn, who wants a cut of the money for suggesting a Speed 2 water slide.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I clicked on the banner, but I've yet to actually get the free cruise.
Here's the problem. Do you ever watch a movie and think, this is one of the best directors I've ever seen? And then you see the rest of their work and you're like, oh, this was an accident. He made an accidental good movie.
Oh, the John Singleton curse.
The John Singleton curse. The John, like, engaged curse.
The John Engaged curse.
That's the only joke I had after Single Man. Jan de Bont is someone that I'm surprised we haven't done more of. I mean, obviously we did Speed.
Have we done Twister yet?
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, man.
So our editor, Ann Burns, suggested to us to do National Treasure. And the reason was, not because she thought it was a particularly good or bad movie. She likes the movie. But whenever she was on a bus, you know, like one of those coach vans, mm-hmm. That was the movie that everyone always watched because it was something that everyone could agree on. It's kind of an indifferent, kind of fun, and it's Nick Cage being Nick Cage. Twister's my movie, man.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in middle and high school, even in like into band when I was a senior, I must have seen that movie 100 times.
I saw it in the theater back in the day when it was first released.
Ooh, there's a theater.
Speed or Speed 2?
Twister. We're talking Twister, Matt.
A tongue twister?
Sure.
Or maybe we should get a big mat and play Twister.
Well, and here's the thing. It also has one of my favorite actors, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Bill Pullman, and Cary Elwes. And the reason I bring up Anne Helen Hunt.
You mean Bill Paxton?
Bill Paxton, excuse me. Ooh, oh, God, internet sin. But here's the thing. The reason I bring up all those real actors with real purposes is that none of them show up for this movie, which has zero actors. Willem Dafoe is in there.
It's got at most two actors. It's got Willem Dafoe, it's got Sandra Bullock, and then this literally is a movie that has Bo Svenson in it.
Who's that?
You're exactly right. You don't need to answer the question because you've nailed it.
Is he that guy who keeps getting his vehicle hijacked?
No.
No, he's the captain.
Oh, the chum bucket.
Yes, mm-hmm. him. Well, the way I know him is from the original Inglourious Basterds back in the 70s, where he played the lead along with Fred Williamson, and he actually showed up in like two scenes in Quentin Tarantino's version.
Well, I was going to say, like, in case you thought Tarantino did anything creative or original, he also ripped off that. So there's nothing. There's nothing. I like Tarantino, but he's not creative. He's like a Hollywood editor with a dry hump. That's why Ennio Morricone said... Or Marconi? What's his name?
Marconi. Morricone?
Morricone, thank you. He didn't invent the radio. He just invented Western music. So in case you're curious who Jan de Bont is, he directed a lot of Dutch things because he is, in fact, Dutch. He also directed a lot of Madonna music videos, and he was the director of photography for Leonard Part 6.
Does he love gold? You know, because he's Dutch?
I was going to suggest that he was Paul Verhoeven's non-union Mexican equivalent.
Here's the thing. He is a good cinematographer. He was cinematographer on Die Hard and Flatliners and Lethal Weapon 3. So he had a career, and then he decided, you know what I really want to do after directing an episode of Tales from the Crypt? I want to do movies. And he made one movie, Speed. And Speed is a masterpiece.
Oh, Speed was good.
Speed is amazing. Keanu Reeves is there. And Sandy Bullock. Let's talk about Sandy for 2 seconds.
She's the only person from the, well, the only main character, really. There's a couple other, like, bit characters that show
my
that guy.
Car!
Yeah, him.
Yeah, is it, how much, is she even that important of a character in the first movie?
She's the romantic lead.
Because I was understanding they kind of brought her to drive the bus when the bus driver got shot.
Yeah, but, I mean, she's on screen more than as much as Keanu Reeves, effectively. She's the second build, which, of course, is because Bridges? Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels is at that point a character actor, and Sandy Bullock and Keanu Reeves are the headliners, they're the A-listers.
And Joe Morton was just there saying, yeah, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to get a Terminator 2 residual check.
And Dennis Hopper, man, is, he's so good. He's a villain.
Ooh.
Now, that being said, I will not take a damn thing away from Willem Dafoe, who is, I think, the best part of this movie. Problem is, he has nothing to do.
It's Willem Dafoe stuck in first gear, which is how you never want Willem Dafoe.
I don't know, man.
With those great big teeth.
After he ends up from a, he's on like a speedo and ends up on a helicopter and he's all, or a plane, and he's just like.
Well, I start at one corner of the scene and then I just use these chompers.
Chompa, chompa, chompa. Chompa, chompa.
So he's like Pac-Man with a blonde mullet.
Hey, Spider-Man, I'm going to bite you. I'm going to bite you. The leech is sucking him off. All right.
I will not hear anything negative about Willem Dafoe's mullet.
Willem Dafoe.
You'll hear more about that mullet.
All right, so here's the thing. So let's start off with the very basics before we get to the plot summary. Right. Apparently a script was written by the help. Jan de Bont got his original co-writer. It was all written out. It apparently involved some sort of terrorist attack. Again, it was on the ground. And then Jan de Bont had a dream one night.
Well, I heard the original script involved a plane that couldn't go above a certain altitude and they were flying through the Andes.
Right.
So they had to like fly and avoid hitting a mountain.
But apparently like it was well written. It was into production. Keanu Reeves was signed on. It was going. And then all of a sudden, Jan de Bont had a dream about a ship crashing into a small island. And he threw everything out and said, this is my movie. And Keanu Reeves said, bye. Or possibly, bogus. And then he walked away from his contract. Now, Keanu Reeves is one of those people that he'll show up in a movie and I'll be like, I have to see it now. He might be always Bill S. Preston Esquire. Oh, no, he's Ted Theodore Logan. Excuse me. Ted Theodore Logan. But he's also a fantastic, charismatic actor. And in that first one, he's told to play it straight like a cop, and he's great.
Is The Replacements on the docket at all for us?
Not yet, but I watched that movie a whole embarrassingly amount of times.
Me too.
Gene Hackman is the coach.
He was.
And he's good. I can tell no one wanted to be there, but they all can perform. Like, because that's kind of who Keanu is. He'll be in your shitty movie, but he'll do a good job in it. What's the bad one?
What's the bad one? That Keanu Reeves has done, The Lake House, I would imagine.
Why do you hurt me, Daniel?
What's that? Is that the one about the serial killer who drowns people? No, that's Cabin by the Lake.
Yeah, no, the lake house is the one, I think, with Sandra Bullock actually in it, where apparently these two people are living in a house 2 years apart, but their letters time travel to each other.
That's not Johnny?
No, that's that was Keanu.
Oh, I'm thinking of what's the one with You Stole My Story?
Oh, a Secret Window.
Gross. Gross movie. Maybe one day.
Good old Matthew McConaughey chewing the scenery.
Not Matthew McConaughey.
That was Johnny Depp and John Turturro.
Turturro. Oh. You Stole My Stories. Daniel, give me a plot synopsis.
Well, the first one was about a bus that kept speeding because it had to speed to stay above a certain speed to prevent a bomb from going off. And of course, it was about the bus that couldn't slow down. In this case, it is about, what's Sandra Bullock's name in this? I've already forgotten. Annie, okay. It's about Annie with her new cop boyfriend, who's Jason Patrick, who is Keanu Reeves in everything but charisma and joy. And they go on this romantic getaway cruise together to try and add something new to their relationship. On that cruise, though, is this former cruise line employee who hijacks the ship and, I guess, is controlling it and keeps it at a certain speed so that the ship and everybody on it will be destroyed. And not Keanu Reeves has to stop him.
I will give... Daniel, I don't know if you're looking at this. I hope you're not. But could you name anything else Jason Patrick has been in? He has 50 acting credits.
I did look him up last night to try and figure it out. I think one of the things I saw that we've done was The Lost Boys.
We haven't done The Lost Boys. But he is, in fact, in The Lost Boys.
We haven't done Gay Vampire 2 Corey's movie?
And with Keanu's best friend, Alex Winter, is in that as well.
Yeah.
Also, Solar Babies, which I have not seen in a long, long time. The reason I bring it up is Speed 1 is not just a movie I kind of like. It's in a huge movie. This movie also had a huge budget. How do you not get anyone... I mean, obviously, Keanu Reeves looked at the script and said, bye. But everyone else, like,
I'll be in your remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, but this script is bogus.
Oh my God. I think they spent all the money on the end.
Yeah. Well, let's go over the rest of the people that are in this damn movie, just to give people an idea of what we're aiming for here. There's Jason Patrick.
Yeah.
There's Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe.
There was a firefight.
There's Willem Dafoe. There is Sandra
Bullock.
You have
to sound 30% more like you're about to cream your jeans.
Oh, good point. Oh, and here we go. Here are some of the other people in this movie. And the whole fact that you're about to say, who's that? Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. There is Mike Haggerty.
Brian McCarty.
Colleen Camp.
Tamora Morrison.
And this was actually one that made me excited to see Kimmy Robertson.
Someone named only Tamia. Don't know who that is. Here's the thing about all of this. All the jokes are delivered by bit players who do bit parts because that's who they are, right? Like, there's a fat guy who always plays the fat guy, and he's been in things like Seinfeld playing the fat guy, and he makes one joke and goes, and then you leave.
Also, Jango Fett was in this movie.
Jango Fett was, in fact, in this movie.
Which one was he?
The first mate. Giuliano.
Okay.
The guy who breaks an arm and then he breaks his other arm. And despite the fact that he's broken one arm, Jason Patrick is kind of flinging him around by that one arm.
How is a recurring joke in a movie about breaking limbs? How is that something that passes
because
any standard test that you need for quality?
Jan de Bont poured himself an absinthe and watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Go on, man.
You can... Well, there's a, you know, black comedy, you know, making jokes about unpleasant things. So,
but this isn't a comedy.
There's probably a way to make breaking limbs funny.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've seen the first Austin Powers with Mustafa, right? He's like, I've fallen and I can't get up, but my leg is hurt very, very badly. Could someone... All right, I'm going to try to use the other... Oh, the other one is broken. Here's the thing, though. Giuliano isn't given any joke-em-ups. There's no joke-em-ups in this movie. It's the driest, most... This movie is the lowest-rated movie I think we've done on Rotten Tomatoes. 4%. This is 23 points lower than Spawn.
Oh, we are forgetting one other name actor that was in this movie. and that's Tim Conway.
Tim Conway deserves more time.
Yes, he does.
Who's the band that plays?
Well, I recognize the song. It was UB40, wasn't it?
It may have been.
Were they the ones actually doing the cameo?
It should have been. Oh, I think God. It was.
Oh, God.
Okay, so...
I hate them.
So let's start with the beginning of this.
Annie's doing a driver's test and talking about her new boyfriend who's simultaneously on some sort of a drug bust mission that involves a high-speed chase.
Yeah.
And TVs falling out the back of a truck and he has to dodge them.
Right. Well, I think it's... Computers, it's something.
Oh, yeah. I swear there had to be I saw an Apple logo in one of them. That was had to be a product placement.
Jesus Christ. Who would pay to have their product in Speed 2?
Someone who probably was not an Apple much longer.
Well, and you never see an Apple working. And, like, I mean, this is 97. Oh, I haven't even told my story. I saw this in theaters.
So did I.
So did I.
Yeah, I went to a friend's birthday, and we wanted to watch it, and I hadn't seen the first Speed yet. They were all excited because they were, you know, they had older brothers, so they had seen R-rated movies before. I hadn't seen this is a PG-13 shame.
Oh, that's the only reason I got to see it was because the original one was R, and I saw this because it was PG-13.
Same situation here.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just a shame. So apparently, Keanu Reeves looked at the script and instead decided to do future episode The Devil's Advocate.
Ooh, with Al Pacino as Satan.
And he was so, who made this? 20th Century Fox? Whoever made this, Jan de Bond included, was so pissed off. So furious that they started to pay reporters to spread the rumor that he had decided to tour with his band Dogstar instead of doing the movie.
I heard that rumor back in the day.
I do.
And Keanu Reeves had a band?
Dogstar.
And then he went on to be John Wick.
Well, I mean, but again, that was a lie. He was actually making a movie called The Devil's Advocate, which stars... Well, you know the Devil's Advocate, right?
Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah! Yeah, which may be a stay too. That's a weird movie I've seen once. There's more nudity than you'd expect. Or maybe not.
Well, Al Pacino just kept showing up naked to the set and nobody had the courage to tell him to put on clothes.
Would you tell the devil to put on clothes?
I would tell Al Pacino to put on clothes.
Well, he's so small, I think I could shove him. Just give him a good shove. Sandy Bullock is doing her driving test. Tim Conway is her driving instructor. She's terrible. This already makes no sense.
Right.
Because she's the driver for the entirety of the first Speed movie, and she's perfectly competent. So I don't know what's happening. I guess it's a reference, like, at the beginning, she lost her driver's license for speeding in the first Speed, right? Which is kind of a joke. But she's a good driver. She just was a... Peter. Regardless, after nearly killing Tim Conway, she ends up stumbling across Jason Patrick, who is part of the, quote, suicide squad, because why wouldn't he be? And she's fierce.
Suicide squad, but no Will Smith. Dang.
Better movie. Better movie. Will Smith in this.
You know what? 1998? Seven. This is seven?
Yeah.
This is before pretty much everything Will Smith did, except for Independence Day. If he followed Independence Day up with this... A, there might be a black person in this movie other than fucking Dante, who's like, I'm Dante the photographer. Hoo-ah! Better movie. Because someone with actual charisma might have made this movie. Well, it wouldn't have worked.
Will Smith as Dante the photographer. I'm wondering how that would work.
No, I don't want him as a subjugated human being. I want him as the hero. He is a good hero. He knows how to smile like a person. Jason Patrick learned about smiling in books. He's never seen a smile in person, but he's heard of it. He's never pronounced it out loud.
He's learned everything about emotions in books. He reads through books and it's like, is that how the human do?
Yeah, Jason Patrick is not really a charismatic actor. Neither is Sandra Bullock in this one either. I'm thinking as a director.
I was going to make a heady joke. He read Stanislavski but never has heard of him. Like. But here's the thing. After grunting about how he's going to try to do better, they decide to take a cruise. And the whole thing...
Well, Jason Patrick, who I'm not even going to bother with these goddamn character names, except maybe Annie. Jason Patrick surprises Annie with cruise tickets.
Cruise tickets, right. And the whole idea is that on the cruise, he's going to ask her to marry him. Because apparently this relationship of indeterminate length is to that level, which is fine, whatever. The only problem is they reference Keanu Reeves' character at least once in this movie, so it hasn't been that long.
I think they've only been dating about 7 months.
Whatever. I mean, it's all garbage, so it doesn't matter. On the cruise ship, they're showing the crew stuff. There's a bunch of fat people on Fat Busters or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the Fat Busters.
And they're sitting around. And then Jason Patrick makes eyes with a deaf girl. Frankly, this part is weird, not because of Jason Patrick. Jason Patrick knows American Sign Language. He's signing to the girl. He notices that she signs. She immediately falls in love with him, which is weird.
This girl is 11, by the way.
14.
14, they say 14. That? Okay.
And they have a, well, I mean, the actress might be 11, but she says, because there's that scene where he essentially, spoiler, Willem Dafoe is fucked up, but he tries to destroy the ship. And at a certain point, Patrick goes back to save the girl because they can't find her. He finds her, they save her, and he signs that I'm in love with you. And I'm almost 15.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've already forgotten so much about this movie.
And then he digs up that line from the first movie about relationships and based on intense circumstances don't last.
Because Sandy Bullock has said it 3 times. And here's the thing. No one cares.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we get into Willem Dafoe and like...
Please, tell me who he is.
He's introduced when one of the ship staff is walking them to their cabin. And he comes out and is going, well, where are my golf clubs? I need my golf clubs. And apparently these golf clubs are a hacking device that he's using to, I don't know, take control of the ship and crash it.
He wants to force them all to evacuate by faking a fire on the ship using smoke bombs.
Why?
Well, I imagine at first maybe he doesn't want it. Well, he does kill the captain pretty easily. So I think maybe at first he doesn't want to necessarily kill anyone. So he tries to make him evacuate the ship.
Here's the thing. In the first Speed, Dennis Hopper had a clear goal. He was holding the bus for ransom. He's like, if you pay me however many millions of dollars it was, I will not blow up the bus. But this guy, they never explain his motive. It's not if this is like a grand suicide mission. It's not if this is to destroy the cruise line. If it's for money, what is this?
I think his line is, I'm dying. I'm going to live it up while I still can. So he's trying to steal. He was stealing jewelry from the ship's vault.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking maybe he just wanted to. Also, he really wanted to take revenge on the cruise company. So it's like, I'm dying. I'm going to live it up with the money I steal from my former employer.
Hey, here's another idea of how to get money from a company that poisons you. Sue them. Go ahead, get a good lawyer and make them settle, give you like a 7-figure settlement.
Or do what the first one did and show us the scene where he's asking for money. He never asks for the money.
Yeah,
he also doesn't care about the diamonds because he smiles at the dinner. But he never takes the diamonds. We never see him asking for the diamonds.
It doesn't. I think he breaks into the ship's vault when they're evacuating and steals a bunch of stuff in a backpack.
Why would he need to destroy the ship for that? Especially when he's still on it and there's a chance that he would be killed then and there.
What's the movie you suggested with the monsters? Deep Rising?
Deep Rising.
Deep Rising had a better plot about people on a ship, man. Like, here's the thing. Dennis Hopper doesn't care about the bus. The bus is hostages, and he makes it clear at the beginning, right? But he's also miles away. The whole joke is that he's nowhere close. And so the fact that he traps Keanu Reeves is a distraction. Mm-hmm. Willem Dafoe has no plan B. His plan A is to crash it into something. I figured his idea was to get as many people dead as possible, but like you said, he pulls the fire alarm, baby, and everyone's off the ship. He doesn't have a plan A or a plan B.
Yeah, especially considering he's on the ship that he's hijacking.
Here's the thing. I'm going to crash it into New York City and get that Spider-Man once and for all.
Well, Marvelites, what do you think will happen?
I'm going to throw it into Boston and get those damn Boondock Saints once and for all.
Thanks, Mayor Quimby.
Oh, God, I'm an abomination. Here's the thing at the end of the day. None of this matters. Like, I can't tell you.
Willem Dafoe definitely has the best scenes in the movie. Like, that bit where he murders the captain, it's not great, but it's effective.
Well, and I'll tell you the best part of the scene. Afterwards, two of the women from Fat Busters want to pose with him. Will you take a picture? He goes, of course I'll take a picture with you, ladies.
I'll take a picture with you all day.
Yeah, that's one of the funny jokes in this movie. Yeah, there are a couple. Where it's like, one of the fat guys, like, there's no little girls in here, only big women.
And it's like,
you think that's funny, man?
Yeah.
Well, and here's By the way, it was actually the band UB40. So.
Oh, that was actually them?
You can put that in
the Okay, that's how bad this movie is. In 1997, they hired UB40 in order to be contemporary.
You know who they should have gotten?
Spice Girls?
Oh my God! If the Spice Girls were on the ship and they're like, and someone's trying to Spice to get onto the lifeboats, it becomes a James Cameron
movie. If you want to be my hijacker, first you got to get with my friends.
Gross.
That doesn't work.
Gross.
No.
Gross. I was thinking more along the lines because this movie wants to be so 1997. It hurts me. If someone was playing ska, that'd be even better.
Oh, there you go. If, like, No Doubt was on the ship.
Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So there's going to be a Zoot Suit Riot on the ship?
Oh, my God. It would explain the fact that there were 14-year-old girls hitting on men. That would be about
Speaking
right.
Speaking of which, and this was one of the weirdest parts of the movie for me, probably the weirdest part. This is a romantic getaway. So after the dinner with the Fat People Pride Association, or I'm not trying...
Fat Busters.
I mean, look, I'm more of on the husky side of gentlemen myself, so I'm not trying to shame anybody, but it was just so weird having them in here.
Yeah.
But they go back to their room because Jason Patrick gets seasick, which never comes up again, even as he's on a hijacked ship, and he's sleeping while Sandra Bullock's trying to mother him, and on the cruise ship TV, they're watching Stanley Kubrick's Lolita.
Mm-hmm. And if you notice, the bucket is filled with vomit, which we panned down to at least twice in that scene.
Yeah.
So maybe it was more of a commentary on pedophilia and how nauseated he felt. No, it's just terrible.
No,
everything's terrible. It's literally the law that we talk about. You said Servo's Law, but it's you don't reference a better movie in your movie.
Never reference a good movie in your crappy movie.
Well, and the problem is here, it's not like, the fake movie in Home Alone, like Angels with Dirty Mouths or whatever.
Oh, Angels with Filthy Souls.
And then Angels with Even Filthier Souls in the sequel.
Well, but that's just like, let's teach Kevin to be a man and like bulk up. Here it's literally, hey, you get it? The little girl's in love with Jason Patrick. You get it? You get it? Gross.
Which means that Yann DeBont or the screenwriter, whoever, hasn't even seen Lolita or read it.
No, he's heard of it. Yeah. Someone told about it. He was in Blockbuster one day and flipped it over and goes, huh, I bet you this could be a movie. Willem Dafoe. I don't know.
Oh, Willem Dafoe, I'm sure, watches Lolita every night.
Oh, he's been in... Wasn't he in Nymphomania?
Antichrist, I think you're thinking of.
I'm thinking of Antichrist. He's already been Jesus once, too.
Yes, he was. He was naked Jesus.
Scorsese?
Yep.
Yeah. Last Temptation, man, is a great, great film. Mm-hmm. Because it's competently directed by a competent director. Hey, this one got 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's talk about that one.
It's got a 3.8 on IMDb as of right now.
Willem Dafoe.
Okay, so... The whole thing with Willem Dafoe is he smuggled these signal jammers and some smoke bombs and everything on the ship so he could essentially take over the controls and control it himself. And there's that bit where he's like somehow gets on the bridge acting like he's drunk and installs all of his equipment in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, the most acrobatic fake drunken stumbling I have ever seen.
Because he's the only actor who can act. And so he's literally traipsing through. You know, if you made this today... it'd be Christoph Waltz, just someone who's over the top with a weird accent. And they're just like, this foreign guy could never possibly be a villain because he has a German accent. Oh, how charming.
Oh, you ready to see something depressing or hear something depressing, rather?
See something, say something. What's up?
All right. Of the two, Sandra Bullock and Willem Dafoe, who do you think has won an Oscar?
Oh, it's Willem, right?
No, it's not.
Not for The Deer Hunter?
Was he in the... He wasn't in...
Oh, I'm thinking of the other one. Oh, shit. I did this today earlier, too. He hasn't won an Oscar for anything. Has he been nominated?
Twice.
For what?
Shadow of the Vampire and The Florida Project.
He should have won for Florida Project.
Yes, he should have, but...
Kicking that pedophile out.
Oh, that was a great scene, but... Yeah. Yeah, Sandra Bullock has won an Oscar. Willem Dafoe is not.
What did she win it for?
The Blind Side...
That's a good movie. I mean, it's not as good as him, but it's fine, fine.
I've never seen it. She was nominated for Gravity, which was fine, and she was good in it. Not really an acting movie.
But here's the thing. She's good in it. It's an effects movie. It's like Jim Cameron winning for best director for Avatar.
He didn't win for Avatar. Well, he won for Titanic.
Well, but even either way, like the point is he shouldn't have won. At least in Titanic, people are doing the talkie talk. Mm-hmm. And Avatar's just like, hey, you know what would happen if the Smurfs were big? I mean,
Dances with Smurfs.
There's going to be 4 sequels. It's already over 12 hours long.
Wait. You know what would happen if the Smurfs were big? Are you talking about your...
La, 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 la.
Are you talking about your favorite DeviantArt pages now? That's the dark side of the internet we do not need to go to.
It's just because it's an incognito. Here's the thing.
Yeah. You got a VPN just to browse through DeviantArt, didn't you?
Oh, Smurf you, Daniel.
Oh.
So at this point, Willem Dafoe has taken over the ship. And as a ship's captain, he has, well, killed the real captain. And all we have left on the bridge is a Scottishman. They blew up the actual engineering section of the engine. And the point is, he's adjusted the heading on the ship to run into St. Martin, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's trying to get it to run to an oil rig or...
an oil tanker.
Oil tanker, that's it.
Which is just off the coast of St. Martin, which of course will matter at the end. So Daniel and Matt, I'm going to ask you this question. At what point did you pause the movie and see how much time was left?
Right about the scene where they get on the cruise ship and...
Well, here's the thing. I was watching the movie and knowing it was terrible. Willem... whose name I think is Geiger.
Yeah, which is a bullshit villain name. Why would you name your villain Geiger?
Well, if something exploded out of someone's chest, that might be better, but that doesn't happen.
Well, but here's the thing. It's not someone exploding out of someone's chest. Someone saw the first Die Hard movie, and they're like, we need a German villain, and we'll give it to an American.
Okay, to be fair, Dennis Hopper's character in the first movie was named Howard Payne. Which is almost as bad, but at least he was charismatic about it and knew what kind of movie he was in.
So the time I paused the movie, which matters to my question, all this shit happens. Dafoe takes over the ship. He releases his endgame. He explains the fact that he was the computer programmer who programmed this 90% automated ship. And being around computers gave him
copper poisoning,
which is bullshit. And that's why he attaches leeches to himself, which he's named individually. And they suck the copper out of his blood, which could give him a few more years of life.
Doctors gave me a few months to live. Maybe these will give me a few more.
And Jason Patrick goes, I met your nurses, and these nurses are leeches, and that is gross. And he goes, yeah, but the nurses will give me an extra few years of life, Spider-Man. And you're like, oh, one person can act, and the other person is a dead, soulless person. Regardless, as the scene progresses, he's announced, I'm going to crash this ship and destroy that thing which they refused to pay me for. And then once I got sick, they fired me because, I guess, healthcare issue? I don't
know. Right to work state.
Yeah, exactly. I paused the movie at this point. The end game was announced. It's not just we're going to kill the remaining few people aboard because they were already manning the life rafts. About half the people on board have already left, right? Is that we're going to crash this into an oil tanker.
You know what one of the least suspenseful places on planet Earth is? A cruise ship. I mean, speed works because it's a chamber drama, right? Everyone's trapped in a bus. They're all in a confined space.
And they can't stop.
One little thing goes wrong, and they could all die.
Well, and the other side of it
is... Are you going to put the leeches on me?
You know,
you never know what he might do, Daniel.
You know, I'm going to send you to the captain because we've already done Under Siege. And the thing about Under Siege is that there are weapons on the ship. So when the bad guys take control of the ship, they can also destroy other things. And those other things matter. And as Steven Seagal, I have a fuck dungeon in my basement. So, I mean, but that's the other side. A cruise ship doesn't matter because there's also no one on the ship who cares. Like, it's another thing, like, if you do something like Gary Oldman's pretending to do a Russian accent on Air Force One, because then there's also someone aboard who matters. But here it just so happens that a hero is on the ship, and you have a goddamn hero cop trying to stop you on a ship that doesn't matter. It's all bullshit. Like, it's all bullshit. Because even on Speed, he wanted people to show up. Like, he wanted either Keanu or Jeff to show up, right? Because those are the people who stopped him before.
Well, Jeff's dead, man.
No, not at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right, right. But at the beginning of the movie, he wanted one of them to show up because they were the ones who stopped him before. But here just so happens Jason Patrick's on the ship. Like, had a terrorist threat been thrown and the guy who foiled him the last time been there, like, if he had attacked the CEO's building or the CEO who fired him happened to be on the ship, that's fine. But it's all innocent people for zero reason.
That's also kind of the problem with some of the Die Hard movies. Well, especially Die Hard 2. Because it just so happens John McClane is in that airport, but at least the villain knows who John McClane is. Because
it was he killed his brother.
No, that's three.
That's three.
Two, it was Colonel Stewart, I believe.
That's correct. That's right.
And again, it was just a random coincidence that he happened to be there, and usually he was over his head, but at least the villain was vaguely aware of who he was, but didn't care because he felt smarter. And in this case, there's like no interaction between the hero and the villain, really. Well,
and the other thing,
they redo the scene where they remotely detonate the bomb to kill the people coming to arrest him, where they're talking on the phone in Geiger's room, and then he sets the bomb off. Which,
yeah, but that could have been anybody that he was talking to.
And then
to.
he chases him through the halls, and then he gets him on the other side of the fire door and is kind of leering at him through the window.
Well, but here's the other thing, too. I mean, you're right. That's what they're doing, and Yonda Bond is missing the point. But it's also a closed environment. Like, he has... He never feels like he... It all feels so boring. This is the most boring action movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, there's not really a lot that's exciting going on until the very end.
You know what this movie needed? Guns. There were guns in the first Speed.
There were no guns.
Yeah.
They had the skeet shotguns or rifles, whatever they were using.
But they didn't use them in the movie.
Except to shoot skeets.
Well, I think he has them at gunpoint, and he's like, tries to say, I have a bomb. And then Jason Patrick just shoots next to him. He's like, okay.
The point is that it never really made any impact, and it never really made anything exciting.
The other thing in the Die Hard movie is what you mentioned. McClane can die. There's blood. There's viscera.
He's covered in blood by the end of those
movies. And bruises,
movies.
And he's like, he walks through glass. He's Jason Patrick doesn't sweat. Keanu's freaking out. He figures it out, but there's just nothing to this movie. Like, yeah,
Jason Patrick gets thrown out a window on a cruise ship full of a blizzard of broken glass and does not get cut once.
Oh, and in the scene we're about to talk about, he's on the front of the ship and goes through concrete and brick buildings and is unscathed. This man has no... This movie is unwatchable, guys.
So long as we're talking about what this movie was missing, I'd like to just also point out that this movie needed something big that the first one had. Cans! We need cans! It's cans!
Don't worry, Sandy, it was only cans!
And it was only cans, Andy. Annie.
Sandy.
Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie?
I would say that she was touched by a smooth criminal, but Willem Dafoe really wasn't that smooth.
But he did touch her.
Well, he did. Struck by a smooth criminal. At one point, he straight up punches her in the face or slams her head into the controls.
Again,
the
not
plane.
Smooth, though.
Here's the thing. Girl, he's smooth. I'll take him.
Maybe his teeth are smooth. They're certainly big.
He has the smile of Giada De Laurentiis.
I'm taking that's not a compliment.
No, it's just Sharkum. Like, I don't know if he only has like baby teeth or something, but his ear to ear smile shows like 400 teeth. I've never seen anything like it except for Food Network's Giada De Laurentiis.
Because you can't see what I'm doing, I'm showing Matt a picture of Giada De Laurentiis.
Not scary enough.
Yeah, but all the teeth. It's every single teeth. You're right. I'm telling you. You had to look it up. You had to know. So at this point, a 45-minute sequence, this is where I paused, where he's like, I'm going to crash you guys into a ship.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because the hijack happens like 45 minutes into this movie, and there's still like an hour and 20 minutes of movie left.
The last 45 is literally them trying to avoid the oil tanker and then crashing into Saint Martin. This movie is awful. So Jason Patrick and Dante, the photographer, who has shown up and said every time, hey, I'm Dante, the photographer. That's how we know his name is Dante.
And he inappropriately take pictures all the time.
He sure does. He says, hey, stop moving because I'm Dante, the photographer. I'm going to take pictures of you up this skirt.
Well, I know when they're cutting the fat people out of the hallway, they're trapped and then they're taking off most of their clothing. He's in there just taking pictures.
Sure is. So they're trying to turn the ship to avoid hitting this oil tanker. And the oil tanker, even though they see them coming for literally 30 minutes of this movie, they're like, we can't move because we can't figure this shit out. And this slow moving scene happens over 3/4 of an hour. Then after avoiding the ship, they realize they're pointed right at Saint Martin. And then there's a scene where everyone looks at each other and says, we can't stop this because the plot tells us we have to crash into this thing. And then they're like, yep, it's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible.
And they have the Scottish guy doing the countdown of a knot.
Oh, yeah. We skip a lot ahead to get to that ending. Jason Patrick goes into Willem Dafoe's cabin and sees the leeches where he hears the backstory. There's a bunch of scenes of him trying to save the deaf girl and trying to rally the passengers to, like, cover. Oh, that scene where they have to cover the vents with smoke coming out of them with their clothes and that one singer refuses to do it because she's not wearing underwear.
And the fat guy's like, hey.
Well, she actually starts pulling her dress up and showing her thighs to random people, I guess to emphasize the point. It's like, why?
Because Jan de Bont said, no one's going to watch this movie unless we show a little thigh. Remember what happened with Swordfish? No.
No.
No. Well,
this movie that'll come out three or four years later after mine.
Life is not worth living sometimes. So let's get to it.
We'll at least skip to a part that's worth talking about, which is when they avoid the oil tanker, steer toward
San Martin.
San Martin.
I just wanted somebody else to pronounce it for me, frankly, because
Martin
I knew I'd screw it up.
San Martin is fine.
But anyway, yeah, they are starting to go towards the island, and Jason Patrick somehow gets on it, and Annie's spirited away by Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe. Yeah, which is, here's the thing.
This bitch is going to win an Oscar before me.
Well, but the two actors.
I refer to all women that way, whether I'm in character or out of character.
And most men. That Tobey Maguire's a real bitch on set. Here's the thing. They get it. Both of them get it. They're like, we're not going to be in all of this movie because there's 45 minutes left at the point we're talking about. That's no joke. This is where I paused it because I'm like, the bad guy's leaving. The girl's leaving. We must be near the end. 45 minutes left on... I got this on Vudu. On Vudu.
Ooh. Yeah, that was tough.
Not that there's anything to say about that 45 minutes.
Well, in that 45 minutes is the whole dream sequence that apparently inspired our good friend Jan.
Yeah, so after steering away from that ship and just kind of scraping against it and everyone's saying, oh no, look out, look out. This is the part that feels the most like the first Speed movie, but in a mistaken form, because you have a bunch of cowering people afraid of what's going to happen to the ship, right? We then see ahead of them an entire town and they give up trying to slow the ship down. They put down the first anchor fails. And they're like, well, should we put down the second anchor? Well, the second anchor gets stuck. They're going into a town of St. Martin at 10 knots. And we know it's 10 knots because the Scottish guy says, we can't slow down. We're going 10 knots and we can't drop another anchor until we slow down further.
They totally cast fake Scotty to be in this movie.
A Canadian kilted yaksman. And the thing about him is he can't act. He just has the right accent to talk about slowing down a ship. He's the first engineer, goddammit.
Even though that's completely... Did anybody remember in the first Speed where they were like constantly shouting out how fast the bus was going? No, because that's a really stupid idea. Well, how did they forget that lesson?
Well, here's the thing. You just show the speedo, right? The speedometer will tell you, buddy. You got it. It's just a number on a screen.
I would say that this movie is aimed at illiterates, but these aren't even words. These are just numbers.
There's nothing. And then after a whole bunch of grab takes where like people are like, oh no, a boat, and they're driving off their own ship, even though about an hour earlier, we see the captain immediately get sucked into the intakes of the other engines. Someone was like, we can't get out of the way. Let's dive out of the way of our speedboat.
Oh, can we mention how bad the CGI is in this movie? Because there's a whole bunch of CGI fire, and it looks like asylum-level work.
Yeah, and they try and build suspense to that fire by having liquor bottles randomly explode.
Yeah.
You can't, guys. Like, we know what fire looks like. This is 2 years after Toy Story. We know what a CGI can do. There's nothing here, man. Anyway, we're at this point just outside of a Caribbean island that they made up called St. Martin.
There's a scene with a woman with a real estate agent trying to buy a condo. And
there's a guy with a car shopping. There's a little dog that looks like the Frasier dog running around.
And Willem Dafoe is cackling, and your little dog, too.
Yeah.
And your little dog, too. Surrender, Dorothy.
I don't know. I think he'd be playing both.
Well, Annie gets away
from
him.
I'm Glinda the Good Witch. Here's my penis.
Well, Annie gets away from it at one point. Instead of doing the smart thing and just bugging off at that point while everyone is distracted by the crashing ship, he starts chasing after her anyway. Surrender, Annie.
A movie with Willem Dafoe and Glinda the Good Witch. Why are we not watching Wild at Heart right now?
Because I also don't want to watch that.
Is that the one with Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
It is.
Yeah, sure. That's a movie with JTT in it.
At this point, we enter a 23-minute sequence where a ship crashes into the Caribbean. So everyone's thought on the scene. Matt, what do you think of the ship?
The last about maybe quarter of this movie is one that's legitimately keeps my attention. Most of the movie does not. But that must be the longest pier they're grinding up on, because you'd think they'd hit the land and stop abruptly. Because they just keep going and going and going and knocking over buildings.
Did you like the scene?
Yeah.
I thought you would. I don't know why. I was watching this and I thought it was the most boring, stupid, drawn out nothing.
Well,
and every joke in it was like, my car!
The person who ruined that scene really is the Scottish engineer who's reading out the speed.
4 knots!
Yeah.
3 knots!
2 knots! We're almost gonna stop!
And then it's shaky cam like it's an original, the original series of Star Trek. It's just like, it's shaking around the Scottish. This guy is like, 1.5 knots! As he's like about to shit himself. Like, I've never seen, and the last time he does it, he's not even on screen. He's like dead on the floor. He's going, 1 knot, we're almost stopped.
This is all helping. You're killing a bunch of people and destroying a bunch of property.
Thousands must be dead. Like, they just keep panning away. He's like, and this, the one Rasta guy is like, I just bought a condo here, man.
Well, that's the same guy from the first one, isn't it? With the Jaguar that Keanu Reeves takes over.
And it is the same guy. And the fat guy who goes, my car! He also had a car destroyed in the first one because he was like, I've got to deal with my fans. And the fans were like, where's Keanu? Like, where's our hero?
Keanu. Is this a Scientology movie now?
Keanu. You'll learn when you get to level 3. You have to get to level 3 first.
How much do I have to pay for that?
We'll talk later. 200 million thetans. Here's the thing, though. Keanu, and whatever you call him, is charismatic. Jason Patrick's like, my God, people. And the one kid is like, mommy, a boat. He's like, there's big boats everywhere. I'm going to go nail your mom in the back room. Those three have more charisma than Jason Patrick the entire movie.
Everybody has more charisma. The fake CGI fire has more charisma.
I mean, if I have to listen to a Dutchman, he can tell me how RoboCop is Jesus all you want. Jason Patrick should be playing RoboCop because you don't need to emote. We saw Commando, for Christ's sake. Arnold can emote more than this guy.
Yeah, Jason Patrick is bad.
Jason Patrick is the worst. And here's the thing. Play a heavy, man. Show up in Expendables 6, The Rapening. But you can't be in a movie where you're the lead. You're not a lead. Sandy Bullock isn't in this movie because she knew better. Like, she doesn't show up in the end and go, I would like to marry you, Sandy Bullock. And she's like, oh, you're kidding me.
Can I pick the travel?
Can I choose our next travel destination? Sure, honey. I cannot travel. And then he reboots. Also, Matt, I love you, buddy. Daniel, I texted Daniel. Matt's going to love that scene.
He did.
And I was like, it's awful, but it's got all the joke-em-ups. Now, I'll tell you one thing, though. You're right. It's the only scene anyone bothered to write because people were making jokes.
It's the best, probably, individual sequence in this movie, but that's not saying much.
I think the phrase is damning with faint praise.
Yeah.
and I'm not going to say you're wrong. If I had to watch the whole movie again, I wouldn't, because I have dignity. But
are you sure?
No, because I do this podcast and I perform live comedy. There's nothing more demeaning than people being like, "So were you the one doing the Stallone impression?" I'm like, "Yep." They're like, "Okay," and then they walk away, because that's happened more than once.
Usually by me.
No, that's the problem. Because I know you'd be doing a joke 'em up. The thing about that is, you're right. This is the most entertaining scene. The problem is, it shouldn't take roughly 45 minutes. And if it did take 45 minutes, other things should be happening other than Jason Patrick on the front of a ship going, "I can apparently plow through anything." And the poor first mate, who's paralyzed by this point, saying, "Oh, my one arm. Oh, my other arm. They're both broken." And then Jason Patrick slaps him on the shoulder, to which he says, "Ow." And then he moves on.
He never shows any pain from all any of that. He's just like, "I think I broke my arm." All
right. He's an autistic weightlifter. Like, he doesn't understand other people's emotion. He's just like, "I am your friend now, Pat, 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 Pat."
And then I will spot you now, Pat, Pat. I think that weight is too heavy because your arms are that tiny.
At one point, Sandy Bullock recognizes the music that they play in the mall portion of this ship. And you just realize, oh, there's nothing happening. They're just like, "I've heard that song before."
Was that when they played Ubi 40?
Oh, this is such garbage. So,
I hate Ubi 40. I hate them. Terrible band.
Take a deep one, Daniel.
Okay. Breathe in through your nose, breathe out through your mouth.
So, let's do finals.
Well, can we at least talk about how Willem Dafoe dies?
Oh, please wrap us up.
Okay, so the movie ends with kind of like the original Speed, where it's the final confrontation. Confrontation? What am I saying? Confrontation.
Yeah, that was this close to being edited out. You almost profaned on this podcast, sir.
Well, feel free to bleep it. Confrontation.
Confrontation! All right, we're done.
Thank you for emphasizing that. With the hero and the villain, and Annie's stuck in the middle. And in this case, they're on a plane, and Willem Dafoe crashes it into that oil tanker that they previously missed. Alarms start going off, and Jason Patrick gets Annie off the ship somehow?
Question mark.
I think he drops them off one of the float plane floaties.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a seaplane, so yeah. They detach one of the float plane floaties.
And he's trying to pull up, and he misses the oil tank and gets jammed up on like their mast.
Well, the thing is, it's not like an instant explosion like it would be with a Die Hard movie or a competent movie. He's just sort of hanging out there as the plane slowly catches on fire, and then it explodes.
And then the whole oil tanker explodes, which I'm not sure how that works.
Or how anyone survives within, 100 yards. But
yeah, that would go off like a nuclear weapon. That would be big.
And hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil. But the one thing I will stop you on here is Defoe's performance, because he's just like, "I survived." And he just starts losing his shit with joy. Like, he's all teeth and happiness, and he is mulleted like it's 1983.
He makes no attempt to get out of the plane, or he makes no attempt to try and preserve his life.
But he doesn't get it. Like, he's so filled with, like, a ebullient joy. It's like he's Jonathan Taylor Thomas in the first season of Tool Time, like, of Home Improvement, like...
You can call it Tool Time. They were all the same thing.
Al Borland went on a killing spree in that last season, if you didn't see it. But here's the thing. Once he explodes, stop the movie. Because after that, it's just like Jason Patrick reaches into his pocket and pulls out the satchel that has the engagement ring that Sandy Bullock shunned him on before.
Yeah.
And after being flirted with a deaf girl for like an hour... She's gone. We never see her again. We never see any of the survivors again. We don't know what happens to any of them. The ship falls over. We presume they're fine. There's no explanation to the end of this movie. It just kind of cold pans out like it's an 80s movie. The problem is, it cold pans out an hour too late. They should stop Dafoe and there should be nothing left. There's so much like carnage. They've killed thousands. There's been a 9/11 in Martinique or whatever they are. and no one bothers to say a damn thing.
It's all about making sure that these two get engaged for some reason, even
they're
though even though we don't care about one of the characters.
Mowage.
Sandy Bullock must have gotten all of this money.
Oh, definitely, big time.
Like, Willem Dafoe will do your movie. You can ask him. I mean, you have to pay him because he didn't show his penis, but otherwise, what was it? Last Temptation?
That's how he got his salary. He threatened to, I guess, whip it out.
Well, apparently, was it Left? One of his movies, they just said, we did a test screening with his penis out, and they said it was too...
It was one of the ones he did with Lars von Trier. I'm not sure necessarily if it was... Antichrist. He may have been in Nymphomaniac, like you said earlier.
The first one.
I've never seen it.
But it was one of these things where like it was too large and upsetting to the audience, so they had to put someone else's penis in. I don't know. Like, here's the thing. He acts with the confidence of an actor who knows he's crazy. I mean, like, and frankly, that's the only good casting decision, because you go from Dennis Hopper to Dafoe. I mean, like, you want a crazy actor. You got a crazy burnt-out hippie going nuts to Willem Dafoe, who may have slept under a turnpike last night. Like, I don't know. I love Willem Dafoe, but that's how he acts, buddy. He'll be your vaguely gay hero in Boondock Saints, and he'll also be your punch-drunk lover in Speed 2.
Vaguely gay hero? There was nothing vague about it.
Well, I mean...
But there was a firefight.
There was a firefight! Oh. So, Sudsies, this or Boondocks? Which one are you going to rewatch first?
As in Speed 2 or Boondocks? Ooh. That's like a Zen question, man. That's like one of those unanswerable things that's supposed to unlock the secrets of the universe.
What is the sound of one bad movie getting thrown out a window?
I'll tell you which one I'd watch. Honestly.
Probably Boondock Saints.
I'll watch Boondocks, first of all, because everyone in there is a character. They're not a good character, but there's something to watch. It's also at least 35 minutes shorter than this movie.
Yeah, this was a little long.
And there's actual blood that happens. How does Jason Patrick end up looking better at the end of this movie than at the beginning?
Contractual obligation.
All that flying glass must have...
hurt his acting.
Exfoliated him.
Yeah, right. Like, I love the idea that he gets a bruise and like, but how do we know if Jason Patrick is still handsome? Because he has a jawline that doesn't exist. That is a man who's a like an automaton. He's not an android, because androids could act. I've seen Data. This man is an automaton. He's gears. Like, you have to twist his back a little bit.
Mr. Data, we want you in the Speed sequel. Make it so.
But, Captain, I wouldn't want to do that. You're the only captain for me. Ooh. When I never find another love. Anyway.
Rule 34.
Hashtag. So, at the end of the day, Sudsies, would you recommend this movie?
One of the things I like about the main thing I like about the first Speed is it's kind of a stupid action movie idea, you know, the bus that couldn't slow down, but they didn't half-ass anything. They got the best possible cast they could. They got the best possible writing that they could. They actually cared enough about the material to make it a good movie. This is what Speed looks like when you really half-ass it, when you get a terrible cast, a terrible cinematography, god-awful special effects. It's just not thrilling. It's, man, I've seen so many polls where this like gets ranked as one of the worst sequels of all time, up there with Batman and Robin, and then for real, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Going into this, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's not as good as the first one, but surely it can't be that bad. But the more I think about it, the more I realize, yeah, it is. As a sequel, this is terrible.
Thank you, Daniel. Matt?
Okay, on that note, I think this is worse than Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin at least was quick moving and at times vaguely entertaining. This movie, about three quarters of it really was not that much fun.
Yeah.
Jason Patrick and Sandra Bullock are not very impressive as actors in this one. I mean, Dafoe is, but he's Willem Dafoe. I did not like this movie enough to review it, nor did I hate it enough to trash it. So just don't bother.
I think, you know, Matt nails it. It's worse than a bad movie. It's a nothing movie. I've never been so bored watching action. Like, that's the, like, I'm simple. You guys know that. Like, Daniel wants a better movie than we deserve. Matt is usually the softball who just likes an idea. I'm usually the guy who's like, hey, man, it's a movie. You should enjoy movies. But there's not even spectacle here.
Yeah, the cruise ship hitting the dock and the town to be a lot more entertaining and elaborate than it was. I guess is what happens. You see a movie when you're like 12 in 1997.
Yeah.
And you haven't seen it in 20 odd years.
Yeah.
But no.
I mean, I saw it with podcast regulars, Zach and Michael and Scott, and I was just like, you know, and they were more bummed than I was because I was just happy to see something in the theater. Rewatching it, I get it. Like, there's just no soul here, man.
Yeah, like, I mean, everybody, well, not everybody apparently because Keanu didn't show up, but everybody just wanted to say, okay, we got to make a sequel. Let's make a sequel.
Well, and it's the most weak, nothing sequel, man. Like, at least Die Hard and Under Siege, you got the original actor back. Like, Keanu, I don't think he could have made it work, but at least it would have been something. This is nothing. This is like the biggest wet fart of a movie. This is just like sitting in your own like wetness. This is nothing. Ugh, gross. Don't watch it. It's not even a watch it to see. Whatever. So next time, Matt, it's your choice for the disappointing sequel. Do you know what you chose?
I do. Do you want me to drop some hints?
Please.
No!
Yeah, so we're doing Star Wars Episode 3, The Revenge of the Sith.
The movie that I spent 15 minutes afterward laughing.
And
not in a good way.
Yeah, so
something's wonderful happened, Danny. I'm pregnant.
So stay tuned next week and every future week when we learn that Hayden Christensen is just really doing a bad Mark Hamill impression. I am your father. No! So I guess stay tuned for Myopia's first venture into Star Wars.
Is this our first Star Wars thing?
It sure is.
Oh, boy.
The first and worst.
I don't know. Oh. I think episode 2 is worse than this. So they're all pretty bad. So stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece on for your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Doobletter Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Ann Byrne. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Ann Byrne. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomtech.com. It is licensed under the Creative Commons license. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.